overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So, good morning. I invite you to enter into this sacred space with me as we journey into our hearts and we put our attention on our breath, observing it moving in and observe it moving out. And as we do this simple action of conscious breathing, there is an invitation to come home. To come home to our center. Last week I shared with you Paul's simple one sentence, how to live prayerfully in this world. And he said, first, don't worry. And so when the mind wants to worry and an anxious thought wants to arise, we choose not to follow that thought. And instead, we put our attention back on the breath. And this is a skill that we can develop. So when life wants us to spiral out with anxious thoughts, with worry, with fear, with confusion, we can notice, ah, there it is. But with the simple act of conscious breathing, we can return home. And that simple phrase, this too shall pass, a disturbing thought is like an idea that is uncomfortable to live with. But we know that by its very nature, thought and ideas are impermanent. They come and they go. But the breath is eternal. And so we come back to the breath. We come back to the stillness. The second thing he said was, in your asking, do it with gratitude. And so he's inviting us to live in a grateful heart for whatever is. We may have a job that we find distasteful, but we're grateful to have a job. We are going through a pandemic on the planet. It's not the greatest thing on the world, but we're grateful that we're able to wear masks, to distance, and even gather in this room. So we're grateful in the midst of what is. And the last thing Paul said was, above all, recognize this peace that's already there. He said, it's a peace that passeth all understanding. And he said, let it guard your mind and let it guard your heart. And so, simplistically, we come home to the peace. A peace that's already there. A peace that we didn't have to earn. A peace that we can't really lose. But a peace that is. And we're choosing, through our conscious breath, to attend to that peace. Attending. And the consequences of this simple action is that we find we're living in a calmness, that a clarity from a wisdom that's inherent within begins to arise. A clarity that was already there, a calmness that's already there, a confidence and a courage to take the next step, no matter what life offers us as a challenge. We're able to meet it with equanimity. Equanimity says it's not good or bad, it just is. And with this equanimity and with this compassion, we journey moment to moment, breath to breath, allowing ourselves to navigate every moment where every breath is a new beginning. So observe your breath. Observe this moment to moment experience of the suchness of life. And to feel that peace. In a few seconds, we're going to open our eyes, and I want you to carry this peaceful awareness, this conscious breath, throughout this time together today, and observe how it changes you and how it enables you to move through the world from a mindfulness-based, effortless unfolding. Where our doing comes from our being. By being peaceful, our actions unfold from that peaceful place within us. Anxiety is still there. Discomfort is still there. But we're not identifying with it. And so just like a storm cloud that would move through the sky, we can observe these patterns, these emotional patterns, these mental patterns, but we don't have to attach to them. And that's our responsibility, our ability to respond, not by being a slave to our thoughts and emotions, but by letting them be what they are. They have no power over us. And then we can smile because we're grateful that we have and are cultivating a way to be in the world. When you're ready to open your eyes and to experience this sharing today, do that. And we'll all see one another. That's so nice. So can you feel that alignment to that peace? Can you feel it, Anastasia? Good. This is what I do every day, is to just keep centered in that peace. And what I've learned is it's an act of violence to try to get rid of anxiety. It's an act of violence to try to get rid of boredom. So there you are, my boredom. There you are, my anger. There you are, my impatience. Could I be compassionate and forgiving with myself when these unskillful energies arise within me? And remind myself that this too shall pass. It's such a beautiful, simple saying. You know, I'm pissed right now. And that might hang out for a period of time, but after a while, my pissosity falls away and I'm back into that peace. You know, it's hard to stay angry because it takes so much energy to feed those less than skillful emotions that want to arise. And yet they do arise. And then we can maybe find a friend like Gene and we'll goof on it for a little while. And just by goofing on it, by laughing about it, it has a way of letting go of us. I love to work on myself. That's one of my most favorite things in life to do. And I've been playing with that wonderful word, responsibility. The ability to respond. And, you know, there's Richard Rohr in his wonderful little book, Just This. He says there's two phases. The first is to grow up. And then the second phase is to wake up. So growing up takes responsibility. I take responsibility for what I'm thinking. I take responsibility for the seeds that I'm sowing. Am I sowing seeds of hate? Am I sowing seeds of judgment? Am I sowing seeds of fear? Or am I sowing seeds of hope? Am I sowing seeds of inspiration? And could I know that consciousness is causative? So what if in taking responsibility, in growing up, we decide to be responsible for what we're creating in this life? Am I creating harmonious relationships with my family and my friends? Or am I creating more problems in this world? To be ruthlessly honest with yourself, that's that fearless inventory. Am I a part of the solution or am I someone who lives in the problem and feeds the problem? And then we link together with other problematic people and together we make a force for the problem. Or have I stepped away from that and say I'm no longer going to live in a world that is at war, but I'm going to be a part of the peaceful movement and we'll call it Black Lives Matter. We'll call it Save the Planet. We'll call it Hug a Tree Day, whatever you want to call it. And notice how good it feels when we do something positive. It's interesting, there's a book by Martin Seligman called Learned Optimism. Now, don't you love that title? Learned Optimism, yes. And at the end of that book, he has a chapter on depression. And he says the greatest way to overcome depression is to go out and do something good for somebody. How simple would that be? Do a kind thing. Smile at your neighbor. We were walking the dog around downtown on Sunday morning, and we wanted to look at the statue that had been defiled by the red paint. And my husband actually read the plaque. And the plaque was really distasteful to read. It was basically a lauding of a way of life that they said was really... And it was basically lauding slavery and that way of thinking. So in having that little experience, we had our little moment at the statue. A lady is walking with her dog in a stroller, just the same as Humphrey. And she has her little dog in the stroller, but the cover's over because she's protecting her dog. We have the top down, and Humphrey's sitting there with his one eye looking around like he's holding court. And we have stroller talk. And I never thought, standing across the street, I'd be talking to an old lady with a stroller for maybe 20 minutes. When she got her stroller, how she's had it for 10 years. She's gone through 3 animals with her stroller. And in a way, she says, I get all my exercise. I walk 3.5 miles with my old dog. And this was an old lady who was fit as a fiddle and ready for love. And so what if life gives you these little encounters so that maybe they're there to open your heart? You know, it's not the big things in life. It is the little things that I think help us navigate and to realize that we're in this together and that we will get through this. If we're safe, we wear our masks. If we're tough, we don't live in a place called denial. And if we're united, that we're going to go through this together as a species. And hopefully our species, this human species, is going to evolve to a higher order of being. That's what everything we do here at the center is to evolve into a higher order of being, where we become part of the solution and not part of the problem. And in order to be a part of the solution, we have to consciously evolve into a realization of our oneness. I love doing the class, and we're doing our last class this week, and it's very meaningful. It's called Catching the Thread, How the Thread of Truth is Incontrovertible. And it was inspired by Anne-Marie, who sent me a photograph of a little book that she said she's going through with some of her friends called Healers on Healing. And I've taught that book many times to my ministerial students and to my practitioners. And I loved the book For the Love of God by the same two men, their anthologies, where they synthesize the great minds, the great teachers, the great hearts on this planet, and they help us navigate. And each one shows us the different facets of how do you awaken to truth. So because of that, Anne-Marie, we're going to teach Healers on Healing in September on Wednesday mornings. And it's powerful for me to revisit these old friends because they talk about the necessity of love in healing. You know, to love one another. Now, love is not a silly emotion that we have only in the romantic sense. In fact, it was M. Scott Peck that said, when the myth of romantic love dies, then the true love can begin. So what if love in the in-between times is the love for life, is the love for this body, is the love for the air that we breathe? You know, it's so funny. I'm going to be closing today with Mark Nepo, and he says, when you've touched death, as often as he had cancer twice, and he came out of it transformed and even more transformed. He said somehow death doesn't become the enemy, but it becomes something that you aware is an inevitable destination for all of us. But what dies? The only thing that would die would be the body. But what we are is this eternal spirit. And so what if in even brushing up against it, we have the opportunity then to become intimate with the true nature of life? A life that was never born and a life that never dies. And so then when we get close to that threshold, and with a pandemic, I think we all feel closer. Do we not all feel a little closer when you know that you can be exposed by one person and then everything could be over? I mean, that's kind of a scary thought. And so it's necessary, if you value life, if you've been at that threshold of life and death, to be really responsible to sustain the time we have together, however short or long that might be, that it'll be quality time. And then it puts a different spin on everything. So today I'm talking about the work of being. And this month of August, the theme for the month is living in a flow. And the idea of living in a flow is that I'm not the doer, that there is this power, it's called life itself, that is living our own life. And that this life force, when it no longer needs this vehicle, it will leave this vehicle. But in the meantime, we have this vehicle. And so last week I talked about a mind that is without fear. Now, the mind is the part of us that gets afraid. It has thoughts, fearful thoughts. But I used John Lewis as the beautiful, glowing example, even in the midst of fear. When you have the fear and yet you feel compelled to stand up for what you believe, the fear has a way of letting go of you when you meet it. There's an acronym, there's several acronyms for fear. One of them is false evidence appearing real. That's the one you hear most often. But the one I like that helps me the most, the acronym that works for me is fear is forgetting that everything is really all right. I'm just forgetting. So to know that everything is all right, Anne-Marie always reminds me we'll get through this. Now, it's going to take a while. And I don't think we're going to get back to the normal that we used to call normal. We're going to be creating a new normal. Shaking hands and hugs are not going to be as commonplace as we used to do. We're going to have to embrace with our eyes and start bowing to one another. And respecting space, which I think is great. That we're called to be responsible. Don't you love responsibility? I remember when they decided you couldn't smoke cigarettes in the airplanes or in the restaurants, or when you had to wear a seatbelt. I remember people angry. Don't take my freedom and say I have to wear a seatbelt. Now we have signs, click it or ticket. So we learn to face the seatbelt. We learn to stop smoking in businesses. And we can learn to wear a mask when you go into the grocery store. You can still smile behind the mask. You can still have a conversation. And you're not going to die by wearing a mask, as contrary to what some people think, that the mask is killing them. False news, fake news, I don't know what it is. So this week, I'm talking about the work of being. And next week, we'll be talking about the work of being human. And then lastly, the last week of August, we'll talk about the work of love. And I'm using this as a launching pad from Lotte Kelly's wonderful book, Shift into Freedom, which we covered in July, where he talks about there's three phases. He said, first you wake up, or this being this wakes up. Then you wake in, and what you wake in is into your humanity, into your unhealed stuff. And that's what we'll be looking at next week. And then you wake out into the world, and that's the work of love. Whether it's love with a tree, with a little dog that you hold up in the air, whether it's a little lizard, whether it's your parents that you realize were just your parents and it was your perception that was shifting. And as we see them differently, they change. That we have so much power to change the world by changing the way we see the world. That's quantum mechanics. It's all about perception. So what if we're here to shift the way we see things? Things aren't problems to be solved, they're opportunities to unfold. When we stop worrying about them, when we can give thanks in the midst of them, and we can anchor ourselves in that peace because it's guarding our thoughts and it's guarding our emotions. So the peace is the place called home, not the anxiety. Anxiety is not home, peace is home. And when we affirm that peace is home, and I choose peace in the midst of all of this, then peace becomes our operating center. Lotte Kelly talks about this spacious field of awareness. He calls it this open-hearted space. And he said, instead of it being the background of your consciousness and your thoughts being the foreground, after a while, this is the answer for you, Anastasia, after a while, and you too, Angkor, this spaciousness becomes the foreground. And the anxiety and the boredom is the background. Oh, there's an bored thought back there. I don't like my work. There's an anxious thought. Oh my God, we have to go. But that's background stuff. It's just noise. It's like the radio. And just like radios, you can turn off, you can turn that off and learn to operate from this peace. It's always there. Just touch your heart and feel the peace. Just do one conscious breath. Every breath's the beginning. So I'm going to begin in peace and I'm going to end in peace. And that's a simple practice. It doesn't get any sweeter or simpler than that. You know, the truth is painfully simple. That this is already there. The thing that we're looking for is already there. It's not something out there. In Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, he talks about prosperity. And he talks about the levels of prosperity and the people that are the most prosperous. You know, and this is a prosperity teaching. And he said the highest order of prosperity is peace of mind. Isn't that interesting? The second highest order of prosperity is to have your health. We take it for granted so much. Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, we forget the non-toothache when we have a toothache. But if you could remember the non-toothache, like my sister-in-law has cancer of the tongue and she's in pain and her tongue is swollen and she can't eat solid foods, she can barely get liquids down. How often do we take our tongue for granted? This thing that so effortlessly moves in our mouth, you know, that can wiggle and do all kinds of things. And for someone who doesn't have it, could we have the empathy then for those who are going through challenges in life, and yet see that it's all about the attitude we have while we're going through whatever we're going through. Susan has the most wonderful attitude. She laughs. She makes the best of the time she has. Even last night when she was told she couldn't receive medical care unless she gained some weight, she said, "I think I'm going to have Haagen-Dazs ice cream for dinner and a glass of wine." And Trace smiled and said, "You go. You know, make it pleasurable." So the work of being is where we move from doing to being. And the question is, how do we tap into this interior resource, of peace? And could we rest in that as our operating center, in that awake awareness? Huh. I'm going to read to you at the end of this book what that would look like. Because it's always nice to remind ourselves what it would look like if we're living from that place. And he describes it so beautifully. He says, "From open-hearted awareness, we welcome all thoughts and we welcome all emotions. And we recognize the same awake awareness is also in others. It's not just that we find it, but I see it in you. And when you find it in yourself, you can see it in your father and you can see it in your mother. You know, the qualities that I used to call their flaws really were their qualities. And it's just because I'm seeing it differently." We move from witnessing ourself to the no-self. Instead of "for me," I become, instead of the local mind, I become the no-mind. And we begin to see from our beingness. And he uses a capital B. There is something that is being itself through each one of us. It was, what was his name? Bernie Siegel. I saw him many, many years ago, over 30 years ago. And he spoke to us in Atlanta, and he got an honorary doctorate in religious science. And he lives by a simple quote, since we're talking about beingness. He said, "Be who you is and not who you ain't." Now, who you is divine. Because if you is who you ain't, you ain't who you is. And if you is who you ain't who you is. I don't remember that, but you get the point. So be who you is. Who you are is this divine presence. It's not this little local whiny self that creates problems in the world. Could we meet in that place, that field that Rumi speaks about, where thoughts aren't necessary, where emotions move through us, they don't define us? So that's the invitation. He says, see from being, where you feel nothing is missing, and you, in quotes, as open-hearted awareness, cannot be harmed. Huh. In other words, we don't have to go seeking safety all the time. Am I safe here? Am I safe here? You realize that what you are, who you are, cannot be harmed. You're an eternal being. You're an eternal soul. You have a lifespan on this expiration date. We all do. We don't know it, thank God. But what we are does not expire. To know yourself is that. And to live from that. He goes on to say, from the support of this open-hearted awareness, we can begin to detox our repressed emotions and rewire our brain for the better. So when those anxious thoughts do come up, we get to observe them, integrate them, and they no longer have power over us. There's a beautiful little acronym I've used, and I live by it. It's called RAIN, R-A-I-N. R is to recognize what's arising. A is to allow it. I is to integrate it somehow, become intimate with it, and then is to nurture yourself through this whole thing. Be gentle, be kind, be loving, be forgiving, be compassionate. This too will pass. So yes, we're going to have emotions, we're going to have thoughts, but they don't define us anymore. Do you know what liberation that is? That's the whole gift of freedom. He says, feeling part of the field of life, we can focus with our local awareness. In other words, your mind is necessary to bring you back home. Huh. That's where the responsibility is, to have that muscle to say stop when your mind wants to run away with a stinking thought. To say stop, and to just breathe, and to observe the peace, and to consciously breathe, every breath's the beginning, it's taking me home. And then I can access that inner resource that is phenomenal. And he says, focus with local awareness and compassionate activity always becomes your natural expression. In other words, your doing comes from compassion. It comes from who you are. And he ends the book by says, there's two U-turns. The first U-turn is called recognition, and that's turning from looking outward, using our ego-identified mind, to look back into the awake awareness. So instead of looking out for your validation, for your information, you look within and resource this something that is peaceful by its very nature, that has your answer. The world doesn't have your answer, but something within you does. Could I be intimate enough with this something within us and access it? So that's the first U-turn. Instead of going out, you go within. The second U-turn he calls realization. And realization is shifting into and abiding as this awake awareness. First we gotta shift it. First we gotta go home, and then we gotta stay at home. You know, it's so funny, this quarantine, this isolation that we're having, so many of us, for people like me who go on spiritual retreats and spend a lot of money for 10 days in silence, withdrawing from the world, now we're all given a spiritual retreat where we get to be at home. We get to do this isolation. And when we go on these spiritual retreats, what we do is we don't turn on the TV, we don't read all the news, but we go within and we realize that the peace that we've been looking for has been there all along. So could we make this our spiritual retreat? And sleep with our dog and find that unconditional love, or our pussycat. It's shifting into and abiding as this awake awareness, which then looks and feels back to include our body from within and looks out to experience the connection with others. So we wake up, we wake in, we wake out. We're all one. We're not separate. And this is the gift that we're going through right now. I have found that just taking even a minute to completely let go and to feel this awareness by itself, before looking back from the spacious awareness, is the whole foundation of this whole idea of shifting into freedom. To come from that place. We live in and through and have our being as this loving presence that is awake, within, without, and it meets itself in the world. And then we do this dance together in a relationship way. We're in relationship with the moment. We're in relationship with our body. We're in relationship with each other. We're in relationship with a pandemic, you know? Being anxious isn't going to get the pandemic to go anywhere. So, okay, so I'm in relationship with a pandemic. Could I do that in a skillful sort of way? I mean, that's the question I live with. And who am I being? Because my doing comes from my being. So if I'm being neurotic, I'm going to have neurotic action. If I'm being anxious, I'm going to have anxious actions. If I'm being pissed off, I'm going to react to the world. But if I'm being calm, if I'm being attentive, and at this stage of life, it's all about attending to the moment, because all we have is the moment. So am I attending to the moment in a skillful way? When I buzz my hair, when I drive the car, when I tend the garden, when I prepare the meal, am I being attentive? When I'm holding the hand of my beloved, am I being conscious and grateful? Or am I being worried? It doesn't serve to, and yet those thoughts arise. Richard Rohr, in his tiny little book, he's like first grade. This is first grade spirituality for me. He gives you that Franciscan punch in the. He says we gotta go from ego awareness to what he calls soul awareness, from ego to soul. Now remember, the ego wants to have answers, but the soul wants to find meaning. So you can know that you're shifting from ego to soul when you want to find meaning through this experience that we're going through. And let this enhance us, let this enrich us. These aren't bad times. I remember in The Tale of Two Cities, Charles Dickens' famous first line of that wonderful, wonderful story, he said, these were the worst of times and these were the best of times. And strangely, we as a human species seem to need adversity in order for us to evolve into a greater order of being. We had to have a civil war, of all things, to end slavery. So if we have to go that route, we had to have a pandemic maybe to wake up humanity and wake up this planet that all species are sacred. And we as a human species, through our mismanagement of other things on the planet, have become the victim of our own unconscious behavior. So could this take us into a responsible place and do things responsibly? That's moving from ego into soul awareness. So he says, when you meditate consistently, a sense of your autonomy and private self-importance, what you think of as yourself, this little me, it falls away. It falls away little by little, as unnecessary, as unimportant, and even unhelpful. This isn't about you. It's not about creating a better illusion of you. So then he says, the imperial I, the I that we all share, the I am that is God, the imperial I, the self that you likely think of as your only self, reveals itself as largely a creation of your mind. That's the little lie. But through regular access to contemplation, and contemplation is going through life breath by breath and seeing the sacred in everything. That right where you stand is holy ground, and contemplate the God in a rock, in a tree, in a flower, and let it preach to you its gospel. This is contemplation. He says, then you become less and less interested in projecting this self-created relative identity of you out into the world. You don't have to attack it, because it just calmly falls away of its own accord, and you experience a kind of natural humility. Huh. A natural humbling. It's never been about me. You know, this illusion, when you grow up and you have all these goals to create a successful me, a prosperous me, a famous me, you know, some me who's done something, then you realize it's not about you. Boy, there's a humbling then. It's about this something greater. So that's how he takes it. And he says, and if your prayer goes deep, invading your unconscious, as it were, then your whole view of the world will change, as Terry's did, from one of fear to one of connection. Because you don't live inside your fragile, encapsulated belief system anymore, nor do you need to protect it. Wow, wouldn't it be great to be emancipated from our own egoic, limited, neurotic, screwed-up self? I mean, this would be just so, unbelievably wonderful. And he says, in meditation, you move from ego consciousness to soul awareness, from being fear-driven to being love-drawn. Now, that was when we spoke, Encore, last week about your career. Instead of being fear-driven, I've got to keep this job because, you know, I had a job like that in New York City, and I remember saying, this job is killing me. This job is killing me. After 4 years in that job, I ended up in New York City hospital in the emergency room. I had collapsed. They did emergency surgery on me, and I realized it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. But it took that surgery, that emergency room, for me to finally let go of that job, which I thought had defined me. And then I was out in the wilderness, and I went back to dance school, and it took me another 5 years of floundering to find my soul. Why couldn't I have just gone to my soul from the first, you know? So he says you move from fear-driven life to a love-drawn life, and that is it in the fewest words I can say, to let love lead the way in whatever it is that you do. And then he says, lastly, of course, you can only do this if something greater is holding you. There is this power in the universe that is greater than we are. You'll call it grace, if you will. We'll call it divine love. That divine love is embracing and holding all of us as we navigate, you know, to be held in the arms of grace, taking away our fears and doing the knowing and satisfying our desires for this great love. He said, if you can allow this something greater to have their way with you, you will live with a new vitality, a natural grace-filled life, and you will be inside of a flow that you did not create. It is the life of the Trinity spinning through you. Now, he, nice Franciscan, he says the church missed the whole point when they made Jesus the only one and they put God up in the heavens. He said the message from the early church fathers were that this triune nature is the nature of God, and that was Jesus's message. The Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit are all one. The Father is this transcendent something that we all experience. The Son is the manifestation, which is all of us, and the Holy Spirit is the way it moves. It's that energy of the divine. It's the creative impulse. And they all exist simultaneously as us, as you, as the world. Boy, then there's a whole different way. And could we surrender to that something else and let God, let the soul, let spirit use this life form to make its pottery, to do its talks, to garden its gardens? You know, I'm blown away. People stop by our house all the time and comment on this garden. Well, I didn't really do the garden. I kind of let nature create this wild masterpiece. It's not a controlled thing. And it's amazing once you trust that life can create beauty. Like Gigi and I have talked about the zinnias. You don't have to just do, the colors don't go together, but in a strange sort of way they do. The pinks and the reds and the yellows, they're all dancing. And it's not like they're organized and they're all in a line and they're all conforming. No, they're all uniquely different and wonderful. So could we have a life that's like that? And not be afraid that we have to control it and make it look a certain way. So Lot Kelly talks about open-hearted awareness. Richard Rohr talks about those two aspects from ego to soul consciousness. And I was thinking about Jesus himself, who taught what he called the Beatitudes, or I like to call them the Beatitudes. And there are eight Beatitudes, and they all start with Blessed are the this. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Those are the ones that aren't, they don't have all the answers. They're the ones that live in I don't know. Blessed are the poor in spirit. They call it spiritual poverty, for they shall see God. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they're the children of God. For blessed are the peacemakers. Those beautiful people that are doing peaceful protests, blessed are the peacemakers, for they are the children of God. So what if he's showing us how to be in the world? To be humble, to be peaceful, to be meek, to be blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. That's what we're doing here at the Center for Spiritual Living. We're hungering and thirsting after truth. We don't want a pablum religion that's filled with sin and judgment. We want a truth that's transformational, that will liberate our soul for eternity. So blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness. It was Rumi that says, don't seek to be quenched. He said, stay thirsty. Now that's counterintuitive, isn't it? You're telling me to stay thirsty, to stay teachable, to stay in the beginner's mind? I don't want to be an expert on anything. I want to be so teachable and so open and so receptive that life continually surprises me. I hear John O'Donohue was one of my, you know, we teach by example. John O'Donohue said, you know, be like the river. He says, let yourself be surprised at your own navigation. River's surprised as it goes around every corner. Could we live in surprise and fascination? I mean, who thought 5 years ago that we would be living through a pandemic right now? Who thought 5 years ago that the Black Lives Matter movement would have changed the face of racism as we know it on the planet through a man named George Floyd? That his life was a martyr. And someone even said, I think he knew it. I think he knew it at that moment when that he was being filmed for eternity. People from all over the world have seen that video. So did he die in vain? No, no, he didn't. Could we know that? And could we be part of the movement that says we're no longer going to accept that way of being in the world? These are invitations for us to stand for something once this thing wakes up within us. This thing that wakes up within us. So being open. I wrote down what would some of the being from which doing comes. So if we made an agreement with ourselves, and you get to find out, maybe get your little journal out, what am I going to be? I'd love to sit down and then just reflect, because it matters what you want to be. So I wrote down, for me, I want to be responsible. I want to be able to respond in a more skillful way. And that's not the finger in your face. You got to be responsible, young lady. No, no, that's saying I'm going to be able to respond. When I find myself bored with my work, I'm going to learn to be grateful that I'm still doing it, or I'm going to tie it to somebody else, knowing that the universe is the source of my supply. It's never a job. It's never the world. Don't make the world the source of your good. The universe is. So then this job doesn't define you. That relationship doesn't define you. If the relationship isn't nurturing, release that relationship to someone else. That's hard for people like me who are very loyal to the thing. You know, I'll stay in a bad relationship till it kills me. But I don't do that anymore. Thank God I found one that's healthy. So could I be responsible for the relationship I'm in with my own life, with my own body? So when there's an ache and a pain in my back, can I love my body back to wholeness? Can I be responsible for giving it and listen to it for what it needs, you know? If I'm hungry, can I eat the food that feed my heart, my body, and my soul? Could I be with people that feed my soul instead of being in an environment that's toxic? Could I choose to honor myself and be responsible for that? So that's one of the beings out of which doing arises. Another one of the beings is, could I be open instead of closed? Could I be open to having a conversation with someone that I maybe don't agree with so we could find common ground? I was deeply moved by George W. Bush when he spoke about his relationship with John Lewis. He said we disagreed on so many things, but we could have a meaningful conversation because we were both working toward a greater idea of a country of equality and peace. I was more conservative, he was more liberal, but we both wanted the same thing, a country that works for everyone, not just a limited few. So could we be willing to have those uncomfortable conversations and assume consent? When we taught ministerial class so many times, the first book we would often use is The Seven Habits of Highly Successful People by Stephen Covey. And the first habit of highly successful people, I love it how simple it is. It must be a win-win. Like with Jennifer and her divorce with her kids, it's got to be a win for the husband and a win for Jennifer. Find a win for both of them, and then you have a successful relationship. It's got to be a win for the kids. It's got to be a win for mom. It's got to be a win for the dog and a win for the cat, you know? We have dogs and cats that love one another. Smudge used to sleep right next to Speck in her bed. That was a win-win, you know? Except when Smudge decided that she wanted to chew on Speckles, and she would take her claws into Speckles' two jowls, and then she would chew on her ear. But Speckles, being the good girl, she says, "Whoa, if that's how you need to make love to me, that's how you need to make love to me." But it was a win-win. You know, I kind of goof on things like animals. Another on my top 10 list of being is being attentive. When I studied with the Sufis, Llewellyn Van Lee, he says, you must stand vigilant at the gateway of your soul to be attentive to what every moment arises. And then instead of reacting to it, could I use it as grist for the mill? If it's my anxiety that rises, okay, there you are, my anxiety. I remember when I studied with Thich Nhat Hanh, he wrote a book called Being Peace. And he says, that doesn't mean that I don't become afraid. He says, when fear arises, he says, I greet it. Oh, there you are, my little fear, he says. And I invite that little fear in. And we sit the fear down. And the fear is concerned. It wants me to be aware of something. Yes, I hear you. I realize that you're concerned, that I'm not being as mindful as that I need to be. My diet isn't as good. I haven't done my yoga stretches, da-da-da-da. Thank you, fear. Thank you, anxiety. Thank you, concern. I was sharing with Anastasia, Rumi talked about confusion. You know, we all want clarity, and sometimes confusion arises. So when confusion would arise for Rumi, he'd say, ah, there is my astounding, lucid confusion. It was big, it was astounding, and it was clearly confusion, but it was my lucid confusion. Then I've detached, I'm witnessing this confusion, I'm not taking up residence in it, because I've already chosen to take up residence as peace, as openness, as responsibility, as wakefulness. The fourth being attitude that I find is really helpful for me is to be grateful in the midst of what is. There's a line from the Bible that says, in all things, give thanks. You know, in our class, we finished up this week with the material, and we're going to have the projects this week, and we had Hugh Prather as one of the last presenters, and he lived by two simple premises. The first one was so powerful for me. He said, I accept my life just the way it is. Not when it gets a certain way and I'll be happy in the sweet by and by. No, right where it is. I accept my life right where it is, and then I navigate through what is. You know, then, and in a way, be grateful for this life. We're going through a pandemic. I'm grateful that we have the awareness, that we have the tools, that we have the masks, and that we have all the things that we need in order to navigate right now. So the grateful heart. And the last one is to be authentic. To be authentic to who you are. Oftentimes we try to recreate ourselves in somebody else's image and likeness. And I remember as a young boy in high school, I think it was in ninth grade, when I saw Shakespeare and I saw Hamlet, which forced me to do Hamlet, and because I was so compelled by it. But Polonius speaks to his son Laertes, and he says to Laertes, as he's leaving home, he says to the son, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not be false to any man. And I remember as a ninth grader, hearing this message at a soul level that we have to be authentic, we have to be true to ourselves. Terry understands that. You have to be true to who you are. Even though the world says, no, that's not the way I want you to turn out, no, this is what my true self needs to be. And then allow that life to authentically unfold in whatever way it is. Because remember, it's not about you. It's about this something that wants to use this life in a creative way. For Mozart, it wanted to create music. For Vincent van Gogh, he would see light. Everywhere he looked, he saw light permeating all of creation. So he says, I don't have words to describe the light that I'm seeing. They thought he was schizophrenic. So he said, I'll paint it. Starry, starry night. He saw the light from the sunflowers, the light from the sky, the light everywhere. And you can kind of feel it when you look at his paintings. Was he crazy? Aren't we all a little bit crazy? I had a Sufi teacher that says you have to have a screw loose in order for this something to come through. So get a few screws loose so it can have its way with you. Instead of, Emerson says in his essay, The Oversoul, he says, we sell ourselves for rags and riches. He says, but if we knew who we really were, who we really are, he said it would bring us to our knees. We are a divine being. I want to close, before I close with a closing little meditation, I want to share with you a little poem by Mark Nepo in his book, The Way Unto the Way. And he talks about the ability to go into the deep and to retrieve the gifts of the deep, to be curious, to go into this true nature and let it inform us. And he does it in a way that is so poetic that it speaks to my soul. His soul speaks to our soul. So I invite you to have that soulful experience with his lovely words. This is his little poem called, For the Thousandth Time, I Want to Know. And he said, If an empty box is torn apart, the air inside still joins the rest. And if an empty heart is shattered, the love that's inside still coats the stars. And when a dove is born, its shell is done. How much fear we know depends on whether we live as something torn apart or as the air that's released. How much fear we know depends on whether we live as something that's being torn apart or as the air that's released. How much pain turns to suffering depends on whether we live as something shattered or as the love about to join. We can live as a shell waiting to crack, or we can live as the dove that is waking to its own song. So when the shell cracks, the bird is liberated, the soul is liberated. It's a metaphor for the soul. And we're no longer identifying with that which includes us. And lastly, sooner or later, we come to the edge of a vastness that has been there all along. This is the vastness that we've been speaking about. And we are forced to decide if we are visitors or if this is truly our home. So let's go home again, one little last time. And when I say go home, the irony is that we've already arrived. We're already there. We have this calligraphy above my head that says, I have arrived. I am home. It's by Thich Nhat Hanh. And it so impacted me when I saw it, I had to have it. Because it's all about going home. To a home that never went anywhere. A home that's always there waiting for us. There is a song in The Wiz called Home. And the opening lyric is, when I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing. I wish I was home. I wish I was back there with the things that I'm knowing. And so what are the things that we're knowing now? That by being fully present in this moment and in this breath, we are beginning a new life. One that's always created in the moment, one breath at a time. And I open to the wisdom of that breath, that conscious breath. As I abide in this spaciousness, I realize I'm not a visitor touching the spaciousness, as Mark Nepo would invite us to see, but I am at home in this vast field of spacious awareness. And I don't need anything to complete me. That all is well. And I'm attending to this breath, attending to this moment, attending to the peace. Attending to the stillness. And I witness a calmness and a clarity. And a courage to just be. To be who I is. And as our comfort level increases in this place called home, we realize that we don't have to go out into the world and seek its validation. We don't need to look outside ourselves for someone's approval. We don't need to be constantly doing in order to be enough for ourselves, but we can actually stop and be still. And in that stillness, know that we are this divine presence. And that sounds arise all around us, but they arise from a silent place. And we make more space for that silence, that peace, that calm, that clarity, that courage, that compassion, because it's our true nature. And it's always been our true nature. And now we are able to respond from that place. Not as a place that we get into and we get out of, but a place that we always are. It's so liberating to know that. There's no place to go, there's nothing to do. But our work is to just be. To be that. To be what we already are. When the box, when the life falls apart, that spaciousness that was in the box is still free. It didn't need the box to begin with. When the shell of our world cracks, we are liberated as a new song that sets herself free to be like the bird who pauses for a while on boughs too slight, feels them give way beneath her, and yet sings, knowing she hath wings. And so life becomes a beautiful oracle, a teacher, a messenger. Angels of the Lord say, fear not. Fear not, but behold, right where you are is holy, right where you stand is holy ground. And as we begin to let this be the foreground of our lives, the background music and noise just kind of seems unnecessary. We're not that interested in it anymore. We'd rather be free. We'd rather be empty. We'd rather be filled with love, guided by peace, and grateful to be alive. So much aliveness in this being place. So I invite you now to place your hands in prayer fashion over your heart. Feel that connection to this presence within you. And join with me in the heart salutation by saying together, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are an aspect of myself. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you. In this place we are one. Feel that self-love, and feel that love and rippling out into the world as you open your hands and you open your eyes and you let yourself be an instrument to be the love that you are, to be the love that is, flowing effortlessly into the world, contacting the ones that it needs to contact, knowing that there are no great or small, that is all you, it's all you. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God everywhere. So, see you next week. Thank you all for sending in your tithe checks. It was nice.
Yay.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.